The following broadcast is from our Compassion Radio archives. On today's Compassion Radio.
When you think of Christianity as being a Western religion, the religion of Europe and North America, you're talking about a fairly recent development in the story.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do, and this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio.
If your house is anything like mine, well, you tend to lose things. Your car keys, the TV remote, your child's favorite stuffed animal. I've got three young ones at home, so it's kind of a recurring issue at my household. Hello and welcome to Compassion Radio, the daily radio ministry journal that tracks God's triumphs around the world. You know, it's one thing to misplace a trivial household item. It's quite another to lose track of 1,000 years of church history. What's that about, you ask? Well, here's Norm to introduce today's distinguished guest for a fascinating discussion.
Okay, our guest today on Compassion Radio is Dr. Philip Jenkins, who is professor of history and religious studies at Pennsylvania State University and also distinguished fellow at the Institute for Studies of Religion at Baylor University. Dr. Jenkins, you've been with us before on Compassion Radio, so welcome back. It's great to have you with us again today.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
Listen, the occasion for our conversation today is a book that you wrote some time ago, but it is as relevant today as we speak as it was at the time that you wrote it, and we'll get into that a little bit in a few minutes. But the book is called The Lost History of Christianity. You have, of course, published such books as Jesus Wars, The New Faces of Christianity, The Next Christendom, and many, many others. This particular book is a real favorite of mine because it engages some issues that we here at Compassion Radio are very much concerned about. What I'd like to get at right away is to maybe establish the point, and I think you may agree with me on this, that the discussion of the lost history of Christianity, and in particular, your discussion of how religions die, is not some arcane ivory tower issue. Religions die, you assert, and certainly we know that Christianity is dying out in certain areas of the world right now, and every American Christian, I believe, ought to be concerned about this matter. How do you feel about this whole matter of the topic of how religions die? Why is that of such importance to us?
Well, if you're a Christian, then you're certainly used to the idea of how churches grow and how churches expand. But what I often ask people is, when did you ever read a book about the death or the extinction of a religion, either overall or in a particular area? And very rarely have they done so, but historically religions have often died. It's an important phenomenon. It's one that we should pay attention to. If you look at Christianity particularly, it's a religion that has had different centers of strength at different times, and for many centuries it was headquartered in the Middle East. Those churches in many cases have died out. In some cases they're under extreme stress right now. Perhaps they'll die out in our lifetime. And that has a lot of different implications. One of them is just a theological one, which is we can understand how God would guide his church to growth and success. But what does it mean when God allows a church to be removed? How do we react to that? How do we respond to that? And of course, there's also just a simple humanitarian concern. If we can't be concerned about other Christians around the world, then what right do we have to claim to be concerned about anyone at all? So there are lots of different dimensions here. But as I say, this is a story that's very much in the news headlines, and it's certainly one that we should be paying attention to.
You know, Dr. Jenkins, so often when we get into discussions about the pressures on the church, church around the world, or struggles that Christians are having, even in this country, let's say. So often the quotation from Matthew 16:18 surfaces, where Jesus says, and of course many of us know these words quite well, Jesus speaks to Peter and he says, after declaring him the rock, renaming Simon, of course, he says, the gates of hell will not prevail against the church. And it seems to me that we so often comfort ourselves with our Lord's words to Peter, giving us perhaps a sense of invincibility. And I wonder sometimes if maybe a greater danger to the existence of the church, certainly in the particular areas of the world, is not so much the gates of hell as it is the indifference of privileged Christians in places like the United States or the UK or other Western nations, the indifference of Christians toward their persecuted brothers and sisters. What do you think about that?
Sure, and of course what that says is that the gates of hell will not prevail, but it doesn't say that the gates of hell cannot inflict a huge amount of damage and suffering along the way. Churches can die in many different ways. They can fade away to nothing. They can compromise their values and their beliefs. But in some cases, they can be destroyed completely. But, you know, I really wonder about what sense Christians in the West can have of any sense of global church if they identify it so strongly with their own countries and the West that they have a real problem seeing Christians in, for instance, Africa and Asia as part of that same family. You know, for instance, one example I cite, a country like Ethiopia, by the time that Anglo-Saxon England was converted to Christianity in the early Middle Ages, Ethiopia had by that point been Christian already for over 300 years. Christianity goes much, much back further in those countries. But when people meet an Ethiopian and find he's a Christian, they might say something like, oh, so when were you converted? And of course the answer is a lot longer than you were.
Yeah, absolutely true. I'm very much concerned about the lack of information and sometimes even the lack of curiosity that we in America have. We have certain privileges come to us because of our isolation, you know, with two major oceans on either side of the country and all of that. And that's been sort of a protective barrier in our favor for a long, long time, not so much anymore. But I think at times it also gives us a sense of indifference or a lack of awareness or even a lack of curiosity to know more about the extent of the Christian church and even its history. We are somewhat, it seems to me, addicted to whatever is new and to current trends rather than to history.
I think it's actually more disturbing than that. It's not just the fact that we're protected by two oceans. I think we've always had the sense of being protected by a much greater military power and much greater economic power. So clearly we could never be under threat. Whereas for many Christians around the world, certainly for those in Africa and Asia, they have for centuries lived with the idea of having people of other faiths literally next door in the next country. Sometimes those relationships have been very good, but sometimes they've been very dangerous, and people have never been able to relax in anything like the same way.
You know, Dr. Jenkins, I'd like to put this immediate issue in a larger context for just a few minutes. Tell us about the lost history of Christianity, the title of the book at hand before us today. How did we lose awareness of this, as you define it in your book, this thousand-year period of the church's history?
Well, let me summarize that into a very short space. Everyone knows that Christianity began in Jerusalem. It spread west. It spread to Greece and Italy and Western Europe and so on. But in exactly the same years, it was also spreading east. It was spreading into Central Asia. It was even spreading to China by the 600s. And at the same time, it was spreading south into Africa. So it's useful to think of Christianity as having those three directions, those three dimensions. And for a long, long period, really the first half, the first two-thirds of the faith, the strongest of those was really the kind of Christianity that existed in Asia. You had some of the most numerous churches, some of the wealthiest churches, and really ones that were intellectually, culturally very strong. And what's interesting, almost hair-raising when you look at it is that the Christians who reached China, who reached Central Asia, were so closely tied to the early church. They didn't even call themselves Christians. They were Nazarenes, and they used the ancient form of Jesus, which was Yeshua. So it was almost as if you had the ancient apostolic church spreading through Asia. And so if you were to look at Christians, say, 1,000 years ago or 800 years ago, you'd probably begin with those in the countries of India, Central Asia, China, even a country like Afghanistan, as it is today. And what happened to those was late in the Middle Ages, they were destroyed by a series of disasters, a series of wars, a series of persecutions, and they were reduced to very, very small numbers. But even so, they continued in the Middle East up until very modern times, and much of the worst damage, destruction that was wrought upon them was wrought during the 20th century. And then you have a completely different story in Africa as well. But what I say is that when you think of Christianity as being a Western religion, the religion of Europe and North America, you're talking about a fairly recent development in the story, 500 years out of the 2,000 years of the whole Christian story. So Christians in the West not only have no awareness that these churches are there, but no awareness that they ever were there. So they think that the capital of Christianity has always been Paris or Berlin or London or New York. They forget the time when it might have been Baghdad.
What a great discussion here on Compassion Radio. I'm going to break in here really quick just to let you know that you can listen back to this broadcast anytime you please when you visit our website at CompassionRadio.com. We've made it convenient for you right there online. In fact, you can also give there as well. We're safe and secure at CompassionRadio.com. And while you're at it, join us on Facebook. Let's get back to Norm and Dr. Philip Jenkins discussing the lost history of Christianity.
So they think that the capital of Christianity has always been Paris or Berlin or London or New York. They forget the time when it might have been Baghdad.
You know, Dr. Jenkins, also from time to time, I notice that even when we as evangelicals become aware of Eastern churches, so often some of us, at least in the evangelical community, fail to give them due recognition, even to the point of somehow assuming, because of their liturgies, which seems strange to us, and other factors, that they really are not Christians.
Right.
There is a kind of prejudice that I have seen over and over again in the Middle East and in Central Asia that these are not really Christians as we are. That disturbs me a great deal.
Right. I think you see a lot of different prejudices there. I think that there's a cultural prejudice. It's almost a kind of racial prejudice, but it's more than anything a historical ignorance. Also, that's associated with a kind of multicultural approach, which can be good, but the assumption is that different parts of the world have their own distinctive religions, and we have to respect that. And there's almost an assumption that when you see Christianity in Africa or the Middle East, then it must be a Western religion brought there by missionaries, as opposed to an ancient, in some cases 2,000-year-old, authentic religion of that particular part of the world. And if you look at the deep roots of Christianity in these countries, I mean, it's startling. One example I give is that Christianity was established in Tibet, probably before Buddhism arrived in Tibet. Don't ever tell me that Christianity is not an authentic Asian religion, for example.
Yeah, it's a marvelous example. Let's narrow this discussion down a little bit to a country that is of great concern to us here at Compassion Radio, and that is the country of Iraq, post-war Iraq, I suppose we could say, where there is an incredible and a very disturbing exodus of Christians from that country. I've had the privilege of interviewing quite a number of Iraqi refugees in Damascus and in other locations, and they are suffering greatly. How do you see the situation going on there? Not so much in terms of just the geopolitical situation with regard to the war and whether the war was a good idea and all of that, but how do you appraise the exodus of Christianity and Christians from that nation, from this really one of the seedbeds of the Christian faith.
Right. Let me underline that, just how important Baghdad was in the history of Christianity. If you look at the world's most ancient churches, the ones with the closest ties to the apostolic church, then you would look at something called the Church of the East, which was headquartered in Baghdad for several centuries. That was the one which is probably the greatest missionary church in history. It sent the churches out across Asia, across China, across India, and it also supervised a great series of churches and monasteries across what is now Iraq, which in their time were the greatest Christian centers of the day, far more so than the countries we may know, like Ireland, like France. I mean, the spiritual, the intellectual heritage there is and was just astonishing. At the end of the Middle Ages, that church went into steep decline, but it continued to the 20th century. Probably by the 1960s, some 5% of the people of Iraq were still Christian. They tended to be the more educated, professional, middle-class people. And although it sounds a terrible thing to say, they actually, in many cases, supported the regime of Saddam Hussein, not because they supported his tyranny, his dictatorship, but they liked the way he kept off Islamic extremism. When the Saddam regime collapsed, of course, the new powers were much more fundamentally Islamic. They were Sunni, they were Shiite, and particularly at lower level of those parties, they began persecuting, driving out Christians. They would use kinds of organized gangsterism. They would go to Christians and say, you know, you have to pay a special tax for protection to live in this country, and then another group would come along and make the same request. They would say, you can't own alcohol, you can't sell alcohol, your women must wear veils, and it became harsher and harsher. There were vicious bomb attacks on churches, and the level of persecution became absolutely impossible. Particularly in the cities like Baghdad and Basra, Christian communities were effectively destroyed. They were driven out. They were what we might say ethnically cleansed. And the last decade or so, well, since, say, 2003, has just been a series of catastrophes. I don't have exact numbers, but a reasonable bet would be that the proportion of Christians in Iraq just in that short time has fallen from about 5% of the population to certainly less than 1%. And incidentally, another story that's in the news where many of those people fled is to the nation of Syria, which, of course, is in the middle of its own crisis right now, and where I would hate to see a comparable situation develop.
You know, it's interesting. The Christians that I know in Syria, and as you said, this is probably the primary country to which these persecuted Christians in Iraq have fled. They, once again, just as in the case of Saddam Hussein, have stated that their preference would be that Mr. Assad remain as the head of the government there. In terms of our perhaps internal politics or our consideration of a more American foreign policy or whatever it is, that seems to go against the grain, but I can't think of a single Christian that I met in Syria that has fled to Syria from Iraq that has not said we would prefer to see Assad stay in power. That's hard for us to understand here in the West.
Let me put it like this. The regimes that ruled Syria and Iraq were very closely related. They both belonged to what's a movement called the Ba'ath Party, which is the word for Renaissance. And that was a militantly secular, socialist, nationalist movement that believed above all in being pan-Arab, in supporting Arab unity, regardless of the religion of those people. So if you look at a country like Syria, a sizable majority of the people would belong to the Sunni Muslim faith. And if there was straightforward democracy, those Sunni Muslim ideas would prevail and minorities would be in, frankly, in deep trouble. And so those minorities gave their support wholeheartedly to the Ba'ath Party, and they were rewarded for it. Through the 1990s, for example, the dictator, the then President Assad, Hafiz Assad, had an inner circle of seven advisors, five of whom were Christian. And although Christians only represent perhaps, say, 15% of the population, they had vastly disproportionate influence. Now, again, that poses a number of moral dilemmas in the sense of Christians were surviving on the basis of relying on frankly, a pretty tyrannical regime. But it was so much better than the alternatives. So if you were to ask me a personal opinion, perhaps I should not say this, but I would like to see a regime that tolerated Christians and minorities survive in Syria, even if it's not one that we would like in many other ways.
Do you see the situation pretty much the same way in Egypt at this moment?
No, it's a very different situation. It's a very different kind of equation. For one thing, the Christian communities are, you know, very old, they're very numerous, but they've always had a very different relationship to the state. The nightmare, of course, would be that a radical Islamic regime would come to power, but it would have a much more difficult job squeezing out or persecuting the Christians. The Christians there are deeply tied to the soil. Many of them are sort of peasants and villagers. And frankly, if it came to a war against the Christians would put up a much harder fight. They would be much harder to persecute or remove in that kind of way. But it could happen. And once again, you're talking about a Christian population of perhaps 10% of the whole, and a very ancient, old-established faith with ties to just the oldest, the origins of the faith, the Apostolic Church.
We're talking to Dr. Philip Jenkins today in relation to his wonderful book, The Lost History of Christianity, which I should say is available and has been available for a long time in paperback. Well, as usual with Dr. Jenkins, I wish we had a greater amount of time available today, but we're going to feature Dr. Jenkins again in a follow-up program tomorrow. So we welcome you to tune in and hear our interview with Dr. Jenkins as we talk about how faiths die. So thank you for being with us today, Dr. Jenkins, and we look forward to our discussion tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
Another great encouragement from our vast audio archive. Hear now more good words from Norm on Bethlehem Bible College.
Bethlehem Bible College may not be familiar to you, especially if you're a fairly new listener to Compassion Radio. Well, you need to know about this amazing school, located right on the main road between Jerusalem and Bethlehem. In fact, it's just a short distance from Manger Square and the site of our Lord's birth in Bethlehem. It's a place that you need to visit the next time you go to the Holy Land. Now, Bethlehem Bible College was founded back in 1979 by Dr. Bashara Awad. It was created to provide training in the Bible, in theology, and in other necessary disciplines needed by Palestinian Christian young people who feel the call of God on their lives to serve the Lord in ministry. One of the most unfortunate blind spots that we American evangelicals have is our lack of awareness about or indifference toward the vibrant and spiritually alive community of Christian brothers and sisters that exists among the Arab population of Israel's Palestinian territories. I'm not hesitant at all to say that I believe that Bethlehem Bible College is the most important Christian educational institution that exists today anywhere in the Middle East. The young people it is training for ministry in the service of Christ hold the key to the resolution of the seemingly unsolvable conflict between Jew and Arab in Israel and beyond. Now, my friend, isn't this exactly what we're all looking for in the Middle East? We are supporting the scholarship fund of Bethlehem Bible College and offering financial assistance to the committed students who are pursuing a Christian education but who lack the funds to cover the cost of their study at this wonderful college. Now, here's how you can help to cover the cost of educating one of the deserving students at Bethlehem Bible College.
Every student contributes what they can. Many students can contribute nothing more than their very lives. And that, of course, is the biggest contribution of all. Can we help with the minor costs of training them to bring Jesus to the Muslim-majority countries all around them? Of course we can. All it takes to train a pastor is $900 a year. That's around $100 a month, or $25 a week. And that's for everything they need. It's an unbelievable value, and one of the best investments in kingdom building that we've ever seen. As Compassion Radio partners, you have liberally helped us equip the church at one end of the Silk Road. Please help us this month to equip the church at the other. This is the very birthplace of our faith, after all, and is still equipping new pastors for their role in winning souls for Christ in the heart of the Palestinian territories and other countries throughout the Middle East. Would you consider making this your Christmas gift to Jesus? For gifts of $25 or more, we'll even send you a gift crafted personally by believers who live in Bethlehem. There's a very limited supply of these, so make your contribution early. Thank you for helping the church around the world from one end of the Silk Road to the other.
Thanks for that good word, Bram. And on a musical note, so to speak, we have some of our wonderful Christmas music in stock from Morningsong and the Chapel Singers while supplies last. We offer those for a love gift of $15 for CDs and $10 for the cassette version. And finally, with the countdown to 2017 upon us, we need to remind you that Compassion Radio comes to you daily and reaches out in compassion to those who need to see and experience the love of Christ, only through your financial support. Finally, for your gift of $25 or more, we would like to send you, at your request, a token prayer reminder made for you in the little town of Bethlehem. Bethlehem Bible College students are directly involved with choosing and preparing each item. We trust you will treasure this unique thank you gift as it reminds you to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, which directly affects Bethlehem. You can reach us by calling 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address, Compassion Radio, Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That address again, Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And our web address, of course, available to you 24/7 at CompassionRadio.com. That phone number once more, 1-800-868-2478. This is Jim Governale. On behalf of our Compassion Radio team, have a blessed day in the Lord. And we'll see you tomorrow for the next Compassion Radio.